How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Hello. Welcome to the Latin American History Podcast. Episode 112. Juan de Oñate and the Foundation of New Mexico. Part 3. At the end of last episode, Oñate was preparing to leave on a second expedition of exploration. Although he considered attempting once again to find the Pacific, he had been lured by dreams of the riches he believed were to be found in Quivira, and the possibility of tracking down the survivors of the illegal expedition which he had been tasked with detaining. His route would take him east onto the Great Plains, and there he would see where events and discoveries took him. He brought about 70 soldiers with him, as well as servants to carry the supplies, and some indigenous guides, including, of course, Giuseppe. He deliberately took the colonists he suspected of being most dissatisfied with him. The idea was to deny them an opportunity to either desert or take over the colony in his absence. Retreading similar territory to Coronado, through what is now the Texas Panhandle, they reached the plains without much in the way of events, spending some time with the Apache, who apparently welcomed them. On the plains, they rediscovered the buffalo herds, and consequently ate better than they had in a while. Oñate, of course, had Giuseppe to lead him, but presumably would also have known about Coronado's journey through more or less the same country. Because of this, he followed the Canadian River and avoided getting lost on the monotonous plains as Coronado had. Somewhere near the Texas-Oklahoma border, they left the river and went northeastwards. We can't trace the route exactly, but we have a rough idea of where they went. This did take them across the featureless plains, but they seem to have known which direction to go in, and to have stuck to it, so they did not get lost. As they approached Quivira, they met the first of two indigenous peoples who would define the rest of their expedition. A people the Spanish called the Escanjaque were camping on the plains in teepees, and the Spanish managed to establish relations with them and gain some information. The Escanjaque told them that the city they searched for was known as Etzanoa in local languages, and it was populated by their enemies, who the Spanish called the Rayados. They were able to fill him in on the ending of the Leyva and Humana expedition, telling him that Humana and the remainder of his party had been killed by other indigenous people. We know the rough location that the Spanish encountered the Escanjaque, most likely western Oklahoma, and they provided clues about their way of life. They were nomadic, following the buffalo across the plains and living in teepees. Escanjaque may have been their word for hello, as it was used during their initial contact, rather than their name for themselves. These clues allow us to speculate as to who exactly they were. Some have argued that they were a group of Apache, but others point out that, as we've seen, Oñate and his men already knew of the Apache, and seem to suggest that this was a new group of people. Another Spaniard later gave them another name, the Aguacane, and his information has led some to believe that they spoke a Cadoan language, probably being one of the Wichita peoples. Etzanoa was a more permanent settlement, and this makes it easier to pinpoint. In 2016, its location was identified, just over the border in Kansas. And combined with other clues from Spanish accounts, Spanish are able to identify the Rayado as another separate group of Wichita people. It's not clear if this was the exact same settlement which Coronado had reached and identified as Quivira, although it was probably in the same general area and may have been created by the same or related peoples. The Escanjaque and the Rayados were enemies then, and the Escanjaque told Oñate that the Rayados were responsible for the death of Umana. Although Umana was an outlaw, he was still a Spaniard, and Oñate would have wanted to take revenge, as well as already hoping to conquer Etzanoa / Quivira if it proved to be as rich as he hoped. He continued onward to visit the settlement, the Escanjaque insisting on coming with him. What was becoming clear was that this region was densely populated. This was a good sign in terms of prospects for a large empire to conquer, and the land around there must have been good enough to grow plenty of food and support this large population, something which his colony was struggling to do. It also came with challenges, though. Oñate would have rathered visit Etzanoa alone, but felt unable to risk aggravating the Escanjaque by trying to force the issue. They accompanied him, prepared for battle. Clearly they wanted to join the Spanish in an immediate attack on the Etzanoa. When they reached it, the Rayados were also ready for battle, and it looked like the Spanish were about to be forced into a conflict. It's not that they didn't want to dispossess the Rayado, but they certainly didn't want to have this fight forced upon them on behalf of a people they'd just met and didn't necessarily want to support. It became apparent, though, that the Rayado were not immediately holding them guilty by association. The aggressive gestures and shouts were directed at the Escanjaque, who were returning them, and not, for now, at the Spanish. Some of the Rayado even came out to talk to them and assess whether they were enemies or not. Oñate went to great lengths to assure them that they were not. Gifts were exchanged, although the Escanjaque continued to argue that the Rayado were responsible for the death of Umana, and to fan Spanish resentment against them. Oñate had to decide what to do next. Although they saw no great stone buildings or evidence of gold and silver, Etzanoa impressed the Spanish, and they seemed to have decided that these people were worthy of some kind of respect. Interestingly, some wore jewellery made from seashells, evidence that complex long-distance trade networks must have existed in North America, given how far from any ocean they were. They concluded that these people were numerous and organized, and they would have to tread carefully with their strategy, especially with the volatility of the pre-existing conflict. For a conquistador, however, treading carefully did not necessarily mean treading lightly. Often it meant taking decisive action, gambling on a foolhardy course of action in the face of difficult odds. We saw it when Cortes took Moctezuma hostage in Mexico, when Pizarro organized his ambush of the Inca Emperor, and on countless other occasions. When the Rayado leader came out to meet Oñate, he decided to copy Cortes' strategy. He took the man, whose name was Caratax, hostage. With this done, he entered Etzanoa and found that the population had abandoned it. The Escanjaque wanted to loot and raise it, but Oñate managed, for now, to stop them, and they drifted back out onto the plains. Getting a good look at the settlement confirmed Oñate's disappointing suspicions. It was enormous, but the houses were made of straw and wood. There was no precious metal. While the aggressive tactics against the leadership of their enemies had served Cortes and Pizarro well, here it simply backfired. Besides the difference that the empires those two men were dealing with actually had the riches they were seeking, whereas this policy did not, all Oñate's hostage-taking strategy achieved was to entrench hostility. The Rayado now regarded the Spanish as enemies, while the Escanjaque were also disappointed that they had dissuaded them from looting Etzanoa, and now they were potentially hostile as well. Caratax told Onyate that the land to the north was even more densely populated, and while this inspired him to have a look, it worried his men. They continued onward for about a day, seeing more evidence of a settled landscape, but encountering no actual people, as all of them had decided to avoid the newcomers. Then his men confronted him with their fears. The lack of people was eerie, and they were sure that they had disappeared in preparation for an attack. Clearly they would be vastly outnumbered, and many of his soldiers believed that if this attack came, they wouldn't survive. Besides, they argued, they had already obtained answers to the questions the expedition had set out to resolve. The Umana expedition was no more, and they now knew what this region and the city of Kivaria were like. Often, given what we know of his character, Onyate would have reacted angrily to this, but it seemed that he judged that he didn't have much choice. He agreed that they would go back to San Gabriel. They could always return with a stronger force.
Gamers and watch lovers, stay frosty. We've got some covert intel ready. Movement, the official timekeeper of the highly anticipated Call of Duty Black Ops 6, is set to release a special edition Black Ops 6 watch and accessory collaboration. Shop the design seen in and inspired by the game. From the same military-style field watch that Troy Marshall wears inside the campaign, to aviator sunglasses pulled from CIA operative Russell Adler's in-game look. This collaboration brings the aesthetics of the new Black Ops 6 story straight to your wrist and wardrobe. It even arrives with custom packaging and a free gift with your purchase. A Movement and Call of Duty Black Ops 6 bottle opener keychain. According to the Wall Street Journal, Movement is on the path to becoming a heritage brand, while Gear Patrol hails their automatic watches as mechanical masterpieces. Own a piece of gaming history. Shop the exclusive special edition collaboration at mvmt.com/bo6. That's mvmt.com/bo6.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
When they passed back through Etzanoa, they found the Eskanhaki there, burning and looting it. They told them to stop, but were attacked. This battle lasted for about 4 or 5 hours before the Eskanhaki decided to withdraw. Caratax escaped, and the Spanish continued onwards before any more attacks came. Reaching San Gabriel marked the end of Onyate's second expedition. He could say that he had at least discovered a potentially more prosperous land, which could be incorporated into the colony, and to have fulfilled his duty as best as possible when it came to tracking down the Leyva and Umana expedition. Taking that land would clearly require a military campaign, however, and the rumours of gold and silver had been dispelled. Reaching his settlement did not mean that the drama was over. In his absence, the fears which had prompted him to include the most likely troublemakers in his expedition had been realised. Those left behind had begun organising, agitating for change in the struggling colony. A large group had simply left, beginning the trek back to Mexico. Onyate sent men after them, but they had already reached Santa Barbara and the safety of Spanish territory not under his control. They were arrested for desertion there, but this wasn't too much of a concern, and they probably knew that this would happen. They were sure they would be questioned, and this would give them a chance to tell their side of the story. The fact that so many of them had left added weight to their complaints, and they were confident that when they gave an account of how Onyate ran the colony, the authorities would take their side. In the immediate term, being arrested by legitimate authorities put them out of the reach of Onyate. Mexico City found in their favour, deciding that they were colonists and not soldiers, so the law against desertion did not apply to them. They were allowed to build new lives wherever they chose, rather than being punished or sent back to New Mexico. The colony simply ticked over for the next 2 years. Nothing much happened, and the stories of hardship which those had left brought with them spread throughout Mexico, ensuring that few decided to take a gamble on a better future and replace them. There was an indigenous rebellion in the Pueblo of Taos, but Onyate dealt with it fairly quickly. The king gave Onyate the title of Adelantero and severed his colony from Mexico City. This was positive for Onyate. He would no longer have to obey the viceroy of New Spain. It didn't fix the problems of the lack of prospects which his colony possessed, however. In 1604, he decided that something must be done. He resurrected his plan to find the Pacific and establish a port which might better connect his colony to the rest of the empire and hopefully jumpstart its economy. Taking most of his adult men, he started marching west. Only 50 people remained in his colony. He took part of the route, which Coronado had all those years before, but in reverse, reaching the pueblos of the Zuni and the Hopi, which he declared to be part of his colony. Not that much appears to have happened on this journey. He followed the Colorado River until he reached the sea. This took him just over the future border and back into today's Mexico. What he didn't realise was that he'd found the very top of the Gulf of California, the long, narrow channel which separates the Mexican mainland from the equally long peninsula of Baja California. He concluded that California, both Baja and Alta, the part which is today the US state of California, was an island. This misconception will last for a very long time. If he had understood the geography, he might have marched the relatively short distance across the top of the peninsula and reached the actual Pacific. As it was, the place where he excitedly waded into the water, claimed possession of, and planned to establish a port, would have been unviable, or at least greatly hampered given its position, tucked away at the top of the Gulf. It wouldn't matter. The port was never actually built. Onyate decided to go to Mexico himself, so that he could talk up his discovery and try to secure more funding for his colony. He returned the way he had come, and left some graffiti at a place called El Morro to prove this. This is pretty interesting, a short sentence written by the man himself on a lonely rock. It's not often that you have such direct evidence made by the protagonists of our stories. When he reached Mexico City, he was in for a shock. Too many reports of his bad behaviour had reached there. The Council of the Indies recommended to the king that he be arrested to account for himself, and the king approved. The massacre of the Acoma formed some of the evidence against him. It was argued that he had stepped outside of the bounds of the laws established to protect indigenous people through his actions. It wasn't just concern for those indigenous peoples that built the political will to prosecute Onyate, however. Obviously, those colonists who had deserted had a lot to say about how he had treated fellow Spaniards, and this counted against him. On top of all of this, there was the colony's lack of financial success. If anything, it was proving to be a burden on the treasury, not a contributor. The king was re-evaluating what should be done with it. Now that it existed, it seemed like a misstep to abolish it, but they couldn't keep pouring money in. Onyate was forced to resign from his governorship and prohibited from visiting New Mexico ever again. He was also banished from Mexico City for 5 years. The colony would not be supported, but the priests and their missions would be. The purpose of New Mexico now was simply to convert indigenous peoples to Christianity, and as a secondary bonus, to continue to provide a Spanish presence in the region in case any other power decided to try and encroach into North America. Oñate was already a relatively old man when this story started, and he chose to spend his final years back in Spain. Despite the marks against his name, his status meant that he did okay. The king put him in charge of overseeing all the mines in Spain. He died in 1626, about 20 years after he left New Mexico. As for New Mexico itself, Oñate tried to engineer his son to replace him once he'd been deposed. His son did control it for a few months before a replacement was sent. The Oñate family seems to disappear from history after this. It appears that his descendants didn't manage to hold on to their prestigious status. During that brief period in between reaching the Gulf of California and leaving for Mexico City, Oñate had established a new settlement, Santa Fe. The new governor preferred it and made it the capital of the colony. Santa Fe is still the state capital of New Mexico and is therefore the oldest state capital in the USA. The colony remained a frontier, sparsely populated and economically unproductive. Its primary activity was the conversion of indigenous peoples, and this is why the state is still known for its historic missions today. It would even lose the west part of its territory when California was founded as a separate entity. It too would be a remote frontier, but at least it had access to the ocean. A few centuries later, there will be an enormous revolt, which will drive the Spanish out for several years. We will deal with that one day in a future episode. For now, though, that's pretty much it. There doesn't appear to be much more to say about the colony's early years. I've mentioned across these episodes about how Oñate was sent to track down the illegal Leyva expedition, and about how there had been at least one other illegal venture into New Mexico. Well, this month's Friends of the Podcast episode tells the story of one of those other ones. I had initially planned it to be just another conquistador story, but while researching it, it turned out to be much more interesting than that. It's the story of Jewish persecution back in Spain, of the Inquisition, and how Spanish and Portuguese Jews played a huge role in the colonization of northern Mexico and New Mexico. So if that sounds interesting, the episode will be out in the next few days. You can get access to it, as well as all future and previous Friends episodes, one per month, for just $2 per month. There's information about how to sign up in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's done this already. Your support really helps. And thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast. Written and produced by me, Max Argent. Edited by Alex McNamara. If you want to become a friend of the podcast and gain access to a bonus episode each month, as well as helping to support the running of the show, there's a link with information about how to do this in the episode description. The podcast can also be found on Facebook and Twitter by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. Here, I post updates about new episodes, as well as interesting articles I find about Latin American history. Thank you for listening.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.